Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your week in review for Saturday, November 6th. Welcome back to me. It was a momentous week, and the coming one promises more of the same. If you were a Republican, you can even celebrate a little bit. While those who've owned stocks since the lows of March 2009 can celebrate a stupendous rally since then, with the Dow Jones up 75% for starters. It's not just gold and silver going up. In fact, while the Dow was advancing 75%, much ballyhooed gold advanced just 48% over the same period. My major China holding since the exact March 9/09 low is up 900%. Seriously, I bought a big slug of 13 cents on that very day, and it closed this week at $1.30. I also own shares, however, at $2 and higher. But it's been an amazing period, sports fans. So let's start with the election, move on to the Federal Reserve, next week's big event in Seoul, and then my favorite topic since the spring, Europe. As I go to post, with a few races still undecided, Republicans registered historic gains on Tuesday, picking up 60 House seats, handily exceeding the 39 needed to become the majority party there, and 6 in the Senate, narrowing the Democrats' advantage in the debating club to 53-47. Americans went to the polls in a surly mood, as perhaps best pointed out by the last CNN opinion research survey showing 75% of us believing that the country was heading in the wrong direction. Just to give you a sense of how the tide has turned globally, 86% of Chinese are positive about their own future, but I digress. There were all manner of exit polls conducted on Tuesday, but only one figure really matters, and that was the action of independents, which went 56-38 for the Republicans. In 2008, independents propelled Barack Obama to the White House, Democrats taking them by 52-44. In 2006, independents swung to the Democrats by a whopping 57-39 margin. So just look at the move in the last 4 years. Also by a 56-38 margin, Americans want government to do less, not more. Yet, President Obama, in his day-after press conference, still didn't get it. He couldn't admit that perhaps some of his policies were wrong, whether it's the scope of health care reform, the stimulus, cap and trade, or his anti-business rhetoric and actions. On this last bit, perhaps he gets it a little, but we have one overriding saying here at Stocks and News: wait 24 hours. Wait 24 hours to see how the White House really reacts after the dust is settled and a new Congress is in place. Wait 24 hours to see how the Republicans take up the mantle of leadership in the House. And wait 24 hours to see how the world's leaders treat President Obama and his fiscal policies at the G20 in Seoul next week. It also now becomes all about 2012. As much as the nation is soured on Obama, if the economy has vastly improved by the fall of that year, he stands a good chance of being reelected. But Republicans, in that scenario, will be able to point to their own role in the turnaround and could maintain their gains in the House, while in the Senate, of the 33 seats up in 2012, 23 are Democrats, so the Republicans could easily eke out 4 of those to gain a majority in that chamber. But as Karl Rove best put it, Republicans are on probation. Next up, the Federal Reserve, which back in August telegraphed it was going to unleash quantitative easing 2, or QE2, because the economy needed it. This set off a tremendous debate, even as virtually all asset classes took off. What more free money? Count me in, said Joe. Stock, Peter, silver, Barry Gold, Billy Bob Junk, and who? Emerging market. It's been premium beer all around. On Wednesday, the Fed made the following statement about the economy. Quote, information received since the Federal Open Market Committee met in September confirms that the pace of recovery in output and employment continues to be slow. Household spending is increasing gradually, but remains constrained by high unemployment, modest income growth, lower housing wealth, and tight credit. Business spending on equipment and software is rising, though less rapidly than earlier in the year, while investment in non-residential structure continues to be weak. Employers remain reluctant to add to payrolls. Housing starts continue to be depressed, Longer-term inflation expectations have remained stable, but measures of underlying inflation have trended lower in recent quarters. So that was the Fed statement. Hard to argue with any of this. The only thing you might say is that this week's economic releases, such as a strong manufacturing number for October out of the ISM, a reading of 56.9 when 54 was expected, 50 being the dividing line between growth and contraction, September construction spending up 0.5% when a decline was anticipated, and September factory orders up 2.1% versus a consensus of 1.5%. Coupled with Friday's employment report showing 151,000 jobs were added, might argue that we're heading out of our soft patch. But the jobless rate remains stuck on 9.6%, and we need job growth of 250,000 or and more to begin to make a real dent in this figure. But why do we need the Fed to pump more money into the system? Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke himself answered in a rare Washington Post op-ed the day after the Fed's announcement. Quote, the FOMC decided this week that with unemployment high and inflation very low, further support to the economy is needed. With short-term interest rates already about as low as they can go, the FOMC agreed to deliver that support by purchasing additional longer-term securities as it did in 2008 and 2009. The FOMC intends to buy an additional $600 billion of longer-term Treasury securities by mid-2011 and will continue to reinvest repayments of principal on its holdings of securities as it has been doing since August. This approach eased financial conditions in the past and so far looks to be effective again. Stock prices rose and long-term interest rates fell when investors began to anticipate the most recent action. Easier financial conditions will promote economic growth. For example, lower mortgage rates will make housing more affordable and allow more homeowners to refinance. Lower corporate bond rates will encourage investment, and higher stock prices will boost consumer wealth and help increase confidence, which can also spur spending. Increased spending will lead to higher incomes and profits that, in a virtuous circle, will further support economic expansion. But then Bernanke added, the Federal Reserve cannot solve all the economy's problems on its own. That will take time, and the combined efforts of many parties, including the central bank, Congress, the administration, regulators, and the private sector. But the Federal Reserve has a particular obligation to help promote increased employment and sustain price stability. Steps taken this week should help us fulfill that obligation. So that was Ben Bernanke. Where the chairman is going to be making waves, one would expect, given this last passage, is on the deficit front and pressing Congress to do something about it to send a signal not just to domestic markets but foreign ones as well, that America does get it. So the Fed hopes that with QE2 it keeps interest rates low and spurs us all to buy, including homes, but home building is going nowhere and many homeowners can't refinance because their homes are underwater. While the Fed pushes down the U.S. dollar, a huge consequence of its actions, this may help U.S. exporters, but it also means higher inflation here, as well as higher oil prices, which hit $87 a barrel this week. That's not good. And how the heck do you unwind all this? The Fed's purchases. Oh, well, that's for another day. Mohamed El-Erian, CEO of PIMCO, in an op-ed for the Financial Times, quote, the Fed faces three problems, with its solo role being the first. Having warned in late August in Jackson Hole that central bankers alone cannot solve the world's economic problems, Ben Bernanke, the Fed's chairman, is now leading an institution that is virtually on its own among U.S. policymakers in meaningfully trying to counter the sluggishness of the U.S. economy and the stubbornly high unemployment. Other government agencies are paralyzed by real and perceived constraints, seemingly happy to retreat to the sidelines and let the Fed do all the heavy lifting. But liquidity injections and financial engineering are insufficient to deal with the challenges that the U.S. faces. Without meaningful structural reforms, part of the Fed's liquidity injection will leak right out of the U.S. and result in yet another surge of capital flows to other countries. Mohamed El-Erian continues, the rest of the world does not need this extra liquidity, and this is where the second problem emerges. Several emerging economies, such as Brazil and China, are already close to overheating, and the Eurozone and Japan can ill afford further appreciation of their currencies. Despite polite rhetoric to the contrary in the lead up to the Group of 20 Leading Economies Summit in Korea this month, other countries are likely to counter what they view as an unnecessarily disruptive surge in capital flows caused by inappropriate and short-sighted American policy. The result will be renewed currency tensions and a higher risk of capital controls and trade protectionism. El Arian continues. The third issue relates to the gradual erosion of America's central role in the global economy, including as the provider of both the world's reserve currency and its deepest and most predictable financial markets. No other country or multilateral institution can displace the U.S., but a combination of alternatives can serve to erode its influence over time. No wonder commodity prices surged higher and the dollar weakened markedly in anticipation of QE2, pointing to increased input costs for American companies and unwelcome pressures on their earnings. The unfortunate conclusion is that QE2 will be of limited success in sustaining high growth and job creation in the U.S. and will complicate life for many other countries. With domestic outcomes again falling short of policy expectations, it is just a matter of time until the Fed will be expected to do even more, and this means Wednesday's QE2 announcement is unlikely to be the end of unusual Fed policy activism. That was Mohammed El Arian of PIMCO. Editorial, Wall Street Journal. This is a terribly risky strategy for what we expect will be a little economic gain. The Fed hopes the policy will have the effect of reducing long-term interest rates by 25 to 50 basis points or more, but the 10-year Treasury bond is already near historic lows. Marginal business borrowers aren't worried about the price of money. They're worried about the vagaries of economic policy. QE2 only adds to this uncertainty as the Fed expands its role into fiscal policy and credit allocation. So, as the Fed merrily manipulates markets, which I said weeks ago should be very unnerving, this is in some ways third world stuff, folks, hoping we'll go along and throw caution to the wind and move from treasuries to corporates and stocks, what of our trading partners? They are furious. China's upset over the ongoing efforts to rein in its currency. Germany's finance minister called the Fed's move, quote, clueless. South Korea's pissed. And Brazil's new leader, Dilma Rousseff, said of the currency mess in her country, quote, the last time there was a series of competitive devaluations, it ended in World War II. With hot money flooding into Brazil, the real has risen 39% against the dollar and is slamming its industrial base by making Brazilian goods uncompetitive. Brazil's foreign trade secretary said the Fed's decision is cause for concern. These are policies that impoverish those around them and end up prompting retaliatory measures. Some of that was from the Financial Times. So it's going to be quite a scene at the G20 next week. Don't believe what seems inevitable in terms of a tame formal statement that has already been worked out by lackeys. And don't believe the smiles you see are real. Behind the scenes, if not outward, it will be a tension convention, and I continue to maintain it could get violent, owing to North Korean leader-to-be Kim Jong-un needing to make his mark. One thing is for sure, there'll be lots of talk of hypocrisy when it comes to the United States and our lecturing other countries on how to behave, even as we recklessly go our own way, seemingly oblivious of the pain we may be inflicting on others. Here's an example of the great slowdown that is taking shape in Asia. While China's Purchasing Managers Index, PMI, for October was higher than expected, 54.7, up from 53.8 in September, and importantly, a respected HSBC independent reading showed 54.8. Owing to growth in China's domestic market, which is good, Taiwan's PMI in October went from 49 to 48.6, which is contraction. South Korea's from 48.8 to 46.7, and Japan's from 49.5 to 47.2. These are the headwinds confronting President Obama and his economic team as they touch down in Seoul. It's also not just about Asia. Germany's industrial production fell a whopping and unexpected 4% in September over August. UK housing prices fell a fourth straight month in October. Spain's GDP is now estimated to be flat for the third quarter, hardly what's needed with nearly 20% unemployment and austerity measures just voted in. And then there's Ireland. Incredibly, the Irish 10-year bond now trades at a premium of 525 basis points over the German Bund, and they are sharing the same currency. Greece's premium remains over 800, but they were supposed to be a one-off when the crisis hit last April. why no further countries would require bailouts, the IMF and European Union confidently told us. Ah, but your intrepid editor hasn't taken his eye off the ball, thanks in no small part to his 18 trips to Ireland since 1989. It's getting sicker, not better, by the day. And as I told you when the crisis first hit, when it comes to the European Union, once Greece received its bailout, that was it. I said it would be every man for himself afterwards, despite the EU's pronouncements that had this $965 billion bailout package in place, minus what Greece has already drawn down. Nope, this week the same German finance minister, Wolfgang Schäuble, that called Ben Bernanke clueless, said taxpayers, read Germans, shouldn't be called upon to shoulder the burden of future bailouts alone. Bondholders must pony up, which is exactly what the IMF and EU don't want in trying to restore confidence. What bond buyer will aggressively go into certain sovereign debts if there is a chance they would get a future haircut? This is sovereign paper, after all, not Peter Schmo and company's bonds. The IMF and EU know that if no one wants to buy Irish paper in the future, the interest rates will be such that Ireland or Greece or Spain or Portugal or Italy will never be able to reduce their budget deficits to the preferred 3% of GDP. This is Europe, friends. It's North versus South. It's increasingly everyone versus Ireland. I mean, when it comes to the Emerald Isle, whose government announced another $6 billion in budget cuts, which is just the latest punch in the face for the average lad and lass, the official unemployment rate just dropped for a second month in a row to 13.6%. Wait, editor, did you just say dropped? That's good, isn't it? Au contraire, mon frère, when it comes to this basket case, you see the rate is dropping because young people in particular are fleeing the place. Arthur Morgan, Sinn Féin Enterprise spokesman, told the Irish Independent, quote, emigration is a scourge on this state and is a mask which the government's failed labor market policies are hiding behind. We will be left with an economic wasteland next month unless the government stimulates the economy, creates jobs, and retrains our young people. Fine Gael spokesman said high-skilled employees were leaving. This group represents the lost generation which is being forced to leave Ireland and look for work overseas. In other words, the highly skilled people that are able to leave are abandoning the country in droves. I keep harping on Ireland because it was just a week ago that the EU man in charge of the whole bailout process idiotically gave the all-clear signal. So let me repeat what I first said last spring. These austerity measures being put in place, while needed, run the risk of killing any recoveries in some of the EU member states, and should there be another shock, external or financial, that saps confidence all over again, the European Monetary Union will disintegrate in a nanosecond. There will be no long debate the next time. Don't worry if I'm wrong, I'll be the first to admit it. I am not and have not been short the equity markets, nor am I playing gold. I have some aggressive equity plays of my own that have done well recently, and one clunker, natural gas. But my holdings are special situations, and in the case of China, in particular, a very long-term play that I still plan on holding another 15 months or more. I'm willing to ride out another dip over there should it occur in the interim. My advice to you is just be careful. Don't fall for Ben Bernanke's trap without understanding the global picture. If you want to be 70% or 90% in equities, fine. Just make sure you know as much as possible about each holding of yours, which is why I'm not going in big into the China travel play I mentioned the other week until I know it better. Understand your risk tolerance. Take time to think now and then. My sister-in-law made a great comment the other day when we were talking about how I was hosting Christmas this year and no presents were necessary. Talk about a first for my family. Cindy said, everyone we know is working twice as hard to stay where they were 5 years ago. You all know that's the case. I have argued that I can't disagree with the official inflation data because the hugely important wage component is going nowhere, for one. But at the same time, when everyone's healthcare premiums are going up 19% and many taxes are rising as states and municipalities deal with crushing problems of their own, I have a hard time believing, as some bulls do, that happy days are just around the corner. No, the deleveraging process must continue first. Take care of yourself. Don't get sucked in by some academic from Princeton who is losing touch with reality and the rest of the world. You know, I had some interesting conversations on my long trip that I returned from on Wednesday, just in time to see the president's news conference. On the flight from Guam back to Honolulu, the fellow next to me and I started chatting about Guam and the military buildup there, he having something to do with the servicing of the bases, and he asked me my opinion of the current state of affairs once he found out what I do. How do we solve our problems? Time, I said. We need more time. Time has healed 90% of all wounds. After all, why shouldn't it be the case now? Ah, but Uncle Ben wants it to be Panic City, and we may all yet be panicking. But I do feel a little better knowing that our president and his own reckless policies have at least partially been repudiated. That's cause for a premium beer. Stocks were up again last week. Dow Jones rose 2.9% to 11,444. The S&P 500 up 3.6%. And NASDAQ 2.8%. The Dow and S&P are now up 10% for the year. NASDAQ 14%. That's all for this week. And you can catch all the rest and have a ton on the election. My week in review column at stocksandnews.com. And I will not be doing a podcast next week. I'll be in Idaho attending the Boise State-Idaho football game. If you're going to be there, drop me a note. Next podcast will be Saturday, November 20th. Have a great week.